Welcome to the AI Ireland podcast. I'm your host, Mark Kelly. In today's podcast, I'm speaking with Patrick Callahan. Patrick is the head of insights and data science at Cartrawler. Patrick, great to have you on the show today.
Great to be here, Mark. Thank you.
Patrick, for people that don't know you, you've got a really, really varied background and you've worked in a variety of different industries in a variety of different locations, which might give a little bit of an overview of your career journey to now.
My name is Patrick Callan. I'm from County Cork originally, and you probably hear a bit of an American accent because I spent a bit of time over there. I started in University of Limerick way back and did marketing economics. And you know, at the time, I thought I was going to go down the classic, data route of central banks or something like that, or maybe become a brand manager. I went to the States. They didn't really know University of Limerick at that point. Thankfully, I think they know it now. So I ended up working in direct marketing, which is what it was called back then, CRM, and doing a lot of SPSS and basically modeling. Moved into general advertising. So Ole and May, they were working on the IBM turnaround way back in the 90s, which I guess dates me. And that was interesting. Advertising is a very wonderful and interesting idea, but it's not all of what we do. So there are four other things that are important as well. So moved out of advertising and went into Forrester. That was during the .com. So I was a senior analyst at Forrester Research. If you dig around the internet, you can still find some of my reports. That was a lot of time series forecasting, survey-based research, trying to figure out what the shape of the future would be. So that was a lot of fun. .com was coming to an end, went back to University of Limerick, started a PhD in economics, industrial economics. But then advertising came knocking and went back again and did some more of that. A lot more on the strategy stuff, a lot more on the impact on society, CSR, that kind of thing. Gave up on advertising again, went to consulting. So I was at Accenture for a while, then went to McKinsey. Really love McKinsey. McKinsey's, I think, one of the places where they use data very quickly to try and fix what's broken or try to help you figure out how to get through an opportunity, how to capitalize an opportunity. So it's using data to get things done. So I learned a lot in my 5 years there, and hopefully it's sticking out. Then left McKinsey. McKinsey's a great place, but if I got married at the time, you don't have a lot of time with your family if you're working in that kind of world with those kinds of things. So left McKinsey, went to Channel 4. That was my big data world. So we had probably one of the very first Hadoop stacks in Europe. Now, I'm not the best technologist, but we had some really smart people there. And we built a lot of models that would essentially help us with advertising, audience management, and monetization. So, what today would be ad tech. We won awards, we paired up with universities. It was a pretty productive time. And then I guess the latest chapters of my life, I spent some time in Vodafone. I'm now at Cartrawler. Cartrawler is probably the one I'm proudest of because it's the place we're doing most.
You challenge yourself by getting to so many different industries and different locations. So you're obviously kind of comfortable being vulnerable and just going for it as well. And interesting how you got into advertising, got out of advertising, and then kind of sucked you back in as well, because there's so many different insights and problems that you can actually be solving in. And then in Channel 4, you got to see truly what a lot of data looks like, and then what you actually look to try to do, provide some insights on that as well, which is really good. So you're now at Cartrawler, and Cartrawler's had quite a few changes. Obviously, the travel industry has been turned upside down with COVID, but you and the team have had the head down working on some really interesting projects and coming out of this looking really good.
Yeah, as I said, I think the Cartrawler is the one that I'll be proudest of in my career. We We've not had a great 2 years financially now because, you know, COVID arrived. We were very lucky. We actually got acquired just at the very start of COVID by a new private equity owner, Tarbrook. And they generally, I think, you know, people have varying views on investors and owners. I'd have to say these guys get it. So they've invested pretty heavily into us in making sure that the systems and the processes and the technology will scale and will be more efficient, you know, once travel returns. So we've spent the year doing a lot of work on pricing, a lot of work on the infrastructure, a lot of work on latencies. So in all of the models that we're running at the moment, they've got 40, some of them 30, 20 millisecond latencies. So better user experience. And we've done a lot more on sorts to make, you know, the right product appear in front of you when you interact with our car matching service.
So if we take that into consideration, a customer is on one size, and for ease, people want to be able to buy things that make sense, but there's always the concern, are we paying enough money? Tell us a little bit about your rationale when you're engaging with a customer and giving that really good experience, and maybe some novice examples about the projects. What are the ultimate impact that improve the customer experience?
Absolutely. I mean, you mentioned pricing. I think one of the things that's important both for us and for the customer is the insurance. So when you rent a car from one of our partners, you know, these big companies like the Ubers and the EasyJets, we're also going to offer you insurance. And pricing that risk, you know, again, in 40 milliseconds, is pretty tough. So if we obviously want to give you the insurance at the best price we can, we have to figure out models that will price that risk very, very quickly. You know, again, it's an approximation, but we have to price that really, really quickly. And I think the end result for the customer is that, you know, they get a better experience out of it. But price is one of these things. You know, sort, we have to get you the right cars. So, you know, based on all of the historical data, you know, we have a huge Snowflake warehouse. Based on all the historical data, you know, what are you likely to want? You know, you're on a particular flight, you're coming from X, you're going to Y, it's this time of year, and a whole bunch of other parameters as well. Let's use the technology, machine learning, AI. We're messing with the edges of, you know, LSTMs and so on now, and TensorFlow, but a lot of our stuff is conventional ML. It's using the data and using really good algorithms and really well-tuned algorithms to do the right thing for you. And I think the thing that I'm proudest of is we're doing that right across the cycle. So we've done a lot of work, you know, during the past year. We work with a company called CX Index to get data, and the customer sat data and NPS data. And, you know, a lot of our customers are interested in that data. So we've done a lot on using the, not only, you know, the price likelihoods, but also, you know, the CSAT data is actually part of our algorithms now. So if you look like somebody who will, you know, take a cheaper car, and not worry too much about the level of customer service, then that's the one that will come to the top of the sort. If you look like somebody who would, you know, will pay full price, and you'll pay it because, you know, you prefer to have the service level, get through the airport quickly and so on, then we'll put those cars up there. And you know, obviously with full disclosure, so you actually see the CSATs on those cars at the time that you're considering watching on a purchase. So we then use that data later to go back and have discussions with suppliers. So if they're having an issue, we'll see that there's a higher level of dissatisfaction, and we can show that to them, you know, over a portal. So I think we're kind of taking care of the customer right through their journey, their purchase journey, but also their post-purchase journey.
What I really like about that is you've got clear statistics and insights to say, well, actually, here's what you need to do, because this is what we now have. So it's less of a mode of discussion and it's more factual. And I love taking into consideration the context, because if you think about travel now, people have been locked in. I'm guessing, and I'm going to ask you in a moment about the future of travel, or what are you noticing? But I'll just, even just from my own perspective, you want to get away on a holiday, probably less price sensitive, because you just want to be able to go away for those 2 weeks or whatever, if you can. But you want it to work well. You don't want any heavy hiccups on it, because this year, more than any year, you want to make sure that the holiday experience is positive. So how do you make sure that when you're on that search, or you're trying to pick what's right for you, you're given that nice experience? Because people can get right through to the end, but not press the button to actually make the purchase. And people don't necessarily want to be on different types of sites. They just want to have a really nice experience and then know it's done. And if there's any issues in the future, they know that there's a reasonable explanation that they can get it solved.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I guess it's important to say, like, car troller are the people, it comes back on us if you're not satisfied. You know, it doesn't come back on the partner airline or the partner OTA. So for the most part, we're doing the customer service on these things. You know, if you have a problem, if your car didn't show up at an airport, then the phone call will come to us. You know, we're the ones on the hook, so we're very careful to do our, you know, our very best. It's going to be a bumpy, you know, summer and autumn, I think. So, but yes, like if it is, then it comes back on us. So it's in our interests, you know, to do the right thing for the customer.
So tell us a little bit about the data journey, getting it fit for purpose, utilizing things like Snowflake, and then earning the rights to, you know, provide the models to just do their thing, right? And obviously, this, once they get into production, that's where the hard work starts. But you tell us a little bit about that, because there's people listening in thinking, okay, this sounds interesting for me. I want to get started, but for a variety of different reasons, I haven't necessarily pressed the button, or I've got in before, it just hasn't worked out. I'm kind of cautious to get back in and do it again. You know, there's loads of popcorn kind of projects always going around, but it's sometimes challenging to pick the right ones to back. Tell us a little bit about that.
That's a great question, Mark, because I think that's really the crux of why I'm so happy at Car Troller at the moment. I've obviously, as you said, I've been around. The probably the most important thing is to start with the idea, like whatever data initiative you're taking on, or analytics or AI or whatever, how am I going to get this into production? So, you know, it was almost a crisis a couple of years ago. You have just about every guy who had spent ages learning how to be a great data scientist, and you know, a big company would come along, throw a lot of money at him or her, and, you know, I say, fine, you're in. We've got big data now. You don't have big data unless you have a path to market for the analytics. And that's probably the most important piece of advice that I could give people. You know, figure out exactly what you want to do. Figure out how you're going to get into production. How is this going to affect your business? And if you can't figure that part out, well, then don't hire those guys just yet, because by the time you figure it out, they'll have left. It's a really hot market at the moment, and people will not sit around and do planning sessions or, you know, make Excels for you. That's not what this town pool wants to work on. So the first piece of advice is just make sure you know how you're going to get something done with the data, because that's really what, you know, people like me and I guess my team and the people that we're hiring at the moment, you know, would want to do. I guess the second part is, you know, on the hiring. It's not just about talent. So, you know, maybe 5 years ago, I was an alpha geek. So I was the guy who'd actually be sitting in front of the computer hammering at it in Carcieri until 4 o'clock in the morning. But you know, I'll be really blunt. I am very glad that my team are geniuses, because I'm probably not the right guy to write code. There's none of my code running in CarTrotter right now, and probably never will be. So you need people who want to get stuff done, but you also need to figure out how are you going to make it work with the existing culture, with the existing teams there, and how do you figure out how to team everything up? And you know, my boss is very good at this. So I work for Peter Erdon, the COO, and he you know, he and the CTO and pretty much the entire leadership team at CarTrotter, they're really good at making opportunities for the various pillars to work together and get stuff done. So when you figure out what you want to do, your next thing is, well, you know, how do I get people to kind of all chase the same dream, and to just make it smooth for them, make it possible for them to work together and get it done. And I guess bullet number three, and these are all people bullets. I haven't said anything about technology yet. Bullet number three is like hire people who want to be part of that. So, you know, at various parts of my career, I wasn't actually interested in how much money this thing was going to make. I was interested in, oh, this is so cool. I can remember, you know, I spent about 4 weeks working on Jade models back when they were the cool thing. I had no use case for them, and my manager didn't really understand what I was doing. I mean, it worked out in the end. You know, Jade turned out to be a good thing, but you probably need people who want to make a difference to the company rather than publish papers. We find ways of creating a space with 15% for research, the people who want to do that. You need the R&D as well. And then finally, you know, get the right tech. So we have a huge data science, data intelligence, and a huge insights plant now. Like, so we're very big Tableau customers, we're very big Snowplow customers. There's a ton of Python going along. There's a ton of AWS. There's a lot of low latency, like interconnects happening. So we're looking at Direct Connect. We've got Kinesis. We're not using Spark at the moment. Probably take a look at something Spark-like again for that kind of processing. So put the technology in place so that people can write their Python and it will execute. And I have to throw kudos out here to the guys in PNT in CarTrotter. So like everyone down from John and Donald, Greg, Jim, Garth, Simon, there's a whole bunch of people that we owe some thanks to for ACDC, our tech platform. And that's the reason that we can do these models. You know, they're actually linked directly into the production systems.
And then my final question, the future travel, what are you seeing? What's some of the insights kind of showing you now? You kind of mentioned maybe a bumpy ride.
Yeah, so there's kind of two things. It's definitely coming back. Obviously, there's a huge pent-up demand. My title is Insights. We also did some you know, classic customer confidence, customer intention surveys earlier on this year. Everyone wants to travel. We have... You know, there's a possibility, and the trips are still coming. I think peak will be later. So, and a lot of people are saying this right now, but it actually came up in the survey. We probably won't have everyone traveling by, you know, July, August. It might be more August, September, October. So the peak travel months are generally the summer months. We think the peak will extend. That's because that's when people say they intend to travel. And because if you watch the vaccine rollouts, we're nearly there. It's great news. But just getting the, you know, the travel certification and, you know, the I'm free of COVID, I'm fully vaccinated, you know, documentation, how it can be electronic, that's not quite there yet. I guess the one wrinkle that I would put out there is, you know, it's been a really tough couple of years for the actual car suppliers, so, you know, like the people who will rent you that car at your destination. They've had to kind of predict, you know, what demand is going to be. So there may be shortage of cars in certain places, and it may be hard to be like, oh, pretty much the whole world now will get on a plane as soon as they can and go somewhere. So like there's a danger of shortages. I think it's important for people, and you know, it's just one of these things. It's important for people to just understand that there will be stresses in travel. You know, they may not get the flight they want, they may not get the car they want, they may not get the hotel they want during that huge you know, commencement of movement and travel. And prices will move around as well. There's some technologies. I'm sure some of your listeners will know about the chip issue affecting car production. So there's actually, you know, a shortage of cars of the type that they're used in rental. There's a projected shortage on those ones, and it could last a while. So the supply will be tight, demand will be huge. That obviously pushes prices up. So, you know, unfortunately, and it really wouldn't make a difference to us in terms of profitability, or it's not something we'll have huge control over. But that is one of the things to be, you know, cognizant of, that travel over the next couple of months, everyone has the same idea as you. So,
yeah, John Patrick, it's really good because it's just setting expectations for people. And I used to work in enterprise rent a car for 18 months, and you're at a constant battle between occupancy and yep. customer service score being high, because you didn't want to go under 90%, but then you always want to make sure there was cars ready if customers walked in, or you could take an order. So it is a real fine line between, and from speaking to people in the industry, they tell me that they slashed their fleet. So consequently, you know, exactly. People are working through a smaller fleet. So it's just expectation setting as well. And you know, listen, thank you very much for your time today, providing some insights about what you're doing at CarTrolley, your background, the travel industry, and it's looking really, really good. Now that we're back on track, touch wood as I say that, I've been speaking to Patrick Callahan, Head of Insights and Data Science at CarTrawler. You've been listening to the AI Ireland podcast, and I'm your host, Mark Kelly. Thanks again for your time, Patrick.
Brilliant. Thank you, Mark.